Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Zed giving you the story behind the song on Consequence.
Welcome listeners to the story behind the song. I'm your host, Peter Chadi of Deep Cuts Media. In this week's episode, I interview multi-platinum artist Zed, my first interview with an already legendary DJ whose one song, Stay, alone has been streamed over 6 billion times. That's Zed, whose real name is Anton Zaslavsky, is so big that Las Vegas officially declared his birthday, which was just recently on September 2nd, as Zed Day. Anton, aka Zed, just released his first new album in 9 years. It's called Tell Us, and he just released it a few weeks ago. My interview gets into why he waited so long, but first we discuss his Grammy-winning breakout track, Clarity, from his 2012 debut album, a song all of us have danced and sung to. He tells me how it all came together to jumpstart his career as being one of the biggest DJs in the world. It's a fascinating interview with an immensely talented and equally humble and grateful artist. So take a listen as we dive deep into the story behind the classic dance track Clarity with Anton Zaslavsky, also known as Zed.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.
As we wrap up 2024, the pop culture experts at Consequence are back with our annual report, celebrating the year's best in music and entertainment. And this time, we're bringing you Something Extra, a brand new podcast series exclusively on Amazon Music. Get inside access with interviews featuring the year's biggest artists, actors, and filmmakers, plus discussions with the Consequence team on our best of the year lists. You can tune in with Amazon Music Unlimited, now free for 3 months. For a limited time, get 3 months of Amazon Music Unlimited free by visiting tryamazonmusic.com/COS. You'll get over 100 million songs in stunning HD sound, on demand and ad-free, plus top ad-free podcasts, including the Consequence Annual Report podcast. Even better, every Amazon Music Unlimited subscriber now gets one free audiobook from Audible each month. So celebrate the best of 2024 with Consequence's Annual Report all December at consequence.net. And don't miss the companion podcast by signing up for 3 free months of Amazon Music Unlimited at tryamazonmusic.com/COS or clicking the link in the show description. That's tryamazonmusic.com/COS.
Obviously, you're the multi-platinum artist, DJ, and producer. Some of the statistics are crazy. Over 30 billion streams over the course of your very young career, which is pretty incredible.
I've always thought that my life would revolve around music. Yeah. I never thought I'd be successful. So my whole life, it was just like, I love doing what I do. But hearing numbers like that, they just sound so absurd. It's kind of hard to grasp.
Sure.
You know,
what does 30 billion even mean? You know, it's...
I got to see 30 billion apples to be able to visualize that or something. Yes. But yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm so grateful to be able to do what I love as my work, which, you know, comes down to really me never working.
So your first album in 9 years, tell me about that journey, because that's such an extensive period of time.
Yeah, it was definitely not part of the plan, I will say. I made my first album, Clarity. I felt like I gave it my all. Everything that I had musically, everything that I grew up with, everything that has inspired me, I was able to put into one project. And I'm incredibly proud of it. And I think when I go back and look at my interviews from back then, I think my answer was, I want to look at this album or listen to this album 10 years from today and still be just as proud of it as I am today when I did this interview. And I wanted the music to still live in the same exact way because I wanted it to be based around music and not so much sound design. I really appreciate sound design as a producer, but I'm always music first. Fast forward 13 years almost, I still play the songs from this album. And it's still some of the biggest moments of my set. They still sound amazing. They still feel amazing. So I definitely have achieved what I wanted to do, but I had my entire life to get enough inspiration to make this album. When I made my second album, True Colors, a few years later, I think my goal with that album was to make sure I'm not being put in a box. I created a box around me, not on purpose, but Clarity as an album just ended up being pretty much 128 BPM based, four on the floor dance music. But I was always focused on chord progressions and making slightly more unique versions of electronic music, at least to my ear. And I was scared that I would have to do this forever, and I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to show my true colors with my second album and show all the influences I've had. I've had slower songs. I've had some more rock influenced songs. For the ones who don't know, I've been in a rock metal band for like 9 years. So at that point, I've been making other types of music longer than EDM. And I wanted to make sure that if I ever decide to get creative and change up my genre a little bit, that people wouldn't feel like that's weird. So it was really important for me to make this album. That was the purpose of True Colors. And then I think it got to the point where I didn't know what I had left to say. I was certainly not inspired enough to create a full-length album that I would genuinely feel like is as creative as Clarity or True Colors were. So what was the purpose for me to make an album? I didn't want to be one of those artists who just pumps out albums on schedules because you have to, or because, you know, I technically contractually was obligated to do so. But I'm very lucky to be in a position where my label has had my back since I signed with them, before I ever had anything that I could really showcase. And they've never put the pressure on me to release albums if I wasn't inspired to do that. And so to take pressure off my own shoulders, I kind of decided to go with the method of releasing music quicker, not working on an album, just trying the single way of releasing music. And truthfully, that is the way that music was mostly consumed and released. And, you know, it was immensely successful for me to make these singles, and they became very successful, but a little bit in my heart was left empty. You know, the longer storytelling, the, you know, thinking how song number three will affect you when you're at song number seven, how you modulate from one key to another in a clever way, that was a little unfulfilled. Like I mentioned earlier, you have your whole life to make an album and then you kind of rush the others. I guess for me, it took 9 years of a break from doing this to feel like the first time again. And when I was working on this album, I really felt the same excitement I felt, you know, 15 years or wherever ago when I started working on Clarity. I felt like it was the first time, and that's what I needed to make an album that I consider the best album that I've ever created. It just wouldn't have been the same if I did it when I wasn't feeling like it was my first time again.
Yeah. My family and I were at your show where you were headlining over at Outside Lands this past year. And it was such a mystical evening because the mist was out. It was kind of slightly damp. And so when the lasers were going on and Clarity came on, the crowd went crazy. It was, but it was like, Anton, when you see that happening, what's the impact on you?
It's never not emotional. And it doesn't have to be a gigantic show. Of course, when it's a lot of people, like that show you mentioned, there's a lot of people. And I noticed the excitement when I played Clarity. And the song is, you know, it's a classic at this point, you could almost say. And to still get that kind of reaction is I'm always fighting tears, like genuinely, especially during Clarity. Like, it's a very emotional moment, and it's never not been emotional. It only gets more emotional the longer it goes on. So those moments don't get old. I still get unbelievably nervous, especially that show. I was really nervous. You get used to things and you learn to cope with the anxiety and you learn to perform under pressure. But I've been really getting into fitness and health, and I wear a Whoop strap, which monitors my heart always. And that's how I know that I can't trick myself, because I don't tell it I'm about to go on stage, but it tells me in the moment I walked up, like the first step I take, it knows exactly. So that tells me that I'm still nervous and I'm still excited. And I think the moment that changes is maybe the moment when I should pass that spot to somebody else.
Yeah. My understanding that even with Clarity, when you first handed it over to the label, they were saying, too long. Nobody's going to play it.
Yeah. It sounds a little ridiculous from today's perspective, but I was making Clarity. The moment I sent that email, I remember being in my parents' basement. I was not even done with Clarity yet. It was just about halfway done. But I thought I had cracked something, and I thought it was really special. It was sort of, I've always loved pop music, and I grew up listening to pop music. I missed that in EDM. I missed that human voice. And it wasn't quite as normal back then as it is today. So I sent that email with about half of Clarity, and I was like, guys, this is it. Like, this is what the world needs. It's pulling these two worlds together that are kind of shy of one another. I called up my friends. This was like just before midnight. And I told everybody that they need to meet me at our school because there's parking and I need to play them the song. And all my friends came. We all drove to the school just before midnight, sat in the car. I played them the song and I was just so excited to share it. And then I drove back home and, you know, everybody loved it. And I was like, yeah, I think I got something really special here. But the label was, you know, rightfully so concerned about the length of the song and mainly of the drops, as we call them in EDM, where you have mostly instrumental section without vocals. And on the radio back then, that was very unusual. It became more popular as time went on. And even when I made Beauty and a Beat for Justin Bieber, and I remember just that always being a conversation, whether that's acceptable or not. But you know, it sounds silly right now to say it, but back then it was kind of a question mark. So the label kind of pointed that out to me, but Clarity is just what it is and it will do what it does. That was sort of the perspective I've had. And I think we were all surprised to see how successful it became on a commercial level. I thought that it would for sure be big in my world, in the club world, in the festival world, because I thought there was something magical about it. I don't think any of us expected the pop world to embrace it as much as the EDM world did.
Yeah. I want to touch upon one thing you mentioned. You said that you played it to your school, to kids at your...
To your friends
at school.
Yeah.
So where were you going to school at the time?
This was in Germany. I lived in Kaiserslautern in Germany where, you know, all my friends were and still most of my friends live. They knew I loved making music. They watched me make music all the time. I would always play it for them and get a lot of my feedback from my friends who were more into electronic music than I was. I was just into making it. I wasn't as much into listening to it. So their feedback was really the most honest feedback I could have because they knew more about it than I did. I was just obsessed with getting good at it and knowing everything there's to know about it. They encouraged me to keep going more than anyone because when I started, I had no idea what I was doing was special. I came from a very different world and they really liked it. It's like, well, I guess I'm going to keep going. I'm going to get better at it. I'm going to learn how to be the best at it.
So that was college in Germany.
This was, I suppose, our version of high school. I think our school
So you started doing Clarity and the album while you were still in high school.
I was probably 19 or 20. I think we had 13 years in the school I went to. Yeah. So it's a little bit longer than I think schools go today. So this was before university or college. So I'm not exactly sure how that translates to American school system, but we were still going to school and that's just where we met up to listen to that song.
When you were in school and you were developing that, had you already established some kind of label deal?
Not at all.
Okay.
When I was in school, I was still in my band.
Okay. And that was the project. Band that was called Dioramic?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. We were making somewhere between rock, metal, hardcore with classical influences. Yeah. And I would frequently leave school for a couple weeks at a time to play tours with my band. And then slowly on top of that, I started playing shows as Zed, mostly outside of Germany. Well, really mostly in the States. And I would kind of go back and forth. And then I think we finished school. My career started taking off more and more. So I had the freedom to go kind of whenever I want. But I still lived in my parents' basement at that time. And most of my friends still lived in that town. Most have not moved out yet. So it was this constant back and forth and trying to juggle my band with my solo project. And like it kind of started taking off a little bit more rapidly than I thought it ever would, to the point where I had to leave my band just because I couldn't handle doing both at the same time. Nobody really knew what I was doing. I would leave for like a week or two at a time and in Germany, where I was from, nobody had any clue there was interest in my music. So it's just like, this guy's just always leaving for a couple of weeks. I would go to cities that I had never heard of, play shows, come back home, not even say much about it. And it was just this. And then slowly it became obvious that my career seemed to have taken off, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah. And you went by Zed. So just briefly tell us about how that came to be. Obviously, your name is Anton Zaslavsky. How did you come up with Zed?
That was honestly my friends that we were talking about, the ones that I was playing my music for. One of my best friends, my neighbor, and my buddy who I sat next to in school was also called Anton. And just to differentiate us, they were like, okay, you're going to be B, you're going to be Zed, which Zed is the first letter of my last name.
Yeah.
In America, Everybody says Z, but outside of America, it's Zed. So it was just a way to like know who I am and who the other Anton is. And when I was playing like the tiny shows that I was playing as Zed, it was like 50 to 150 people, mostly my friends. And I would DJ on a laptop without any equipment because I really couldn't afford any. And I remember my friends were like chanting, Zed, 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 like just because they want to hype me up. And I was like, that feels kind of good. I think it's going to, you know, it doesn't really matter. So I'm just going to stick with Zed. And it was really my nickname that my friends gave me. And I just never thought about really, I never thought it would matter what my name was, because I thought I will make music for my friends and I, and like, it won't really go anywhere anyway. So I never thought about my name as something that is important.
Yeah, it's worked out pretty well for
you. It's worked out fine. I like it. Walk on through a red parade
and refuse to make amends. At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.
We are back with Anton. So Anton, let's get into Clarity and the first album and tell us what your process was to get to that first album. Like what your state of mind, first of all, what your state of mind was, but if you can remember how the song even came into your brain for the very first time, just take us through the journey from the very beginning of that song and the first album.
So the journey of my first album started when Lady Gaga asked me to work on her album.
So you're this young guy who was living at home, at least up to that time or close near that time. So how does it happen where Lady Gaga reaches out to you?
I think there's a couple connections between us. The first one was that we were on the same label and I believe signed by the same person, Jimmy Iovine, back in the day. I played a Beats by Dre event in London and she was there. And I think she had briefly heard about me and I met her literally on stage right there and then. And she was like, I'd love to make music with you. And that sounded like I was dreaming and that wasn't real. It's like, okay, I mean, I was such a big fan. To me, it was like, of course. So I kind of just decided to send her a song that I had been working on, which is a song that ended up coming out in 2015, many years later. But it was this snippet that I thought she was always ahead of her time, especially in the position she was. So I thought she would appreciate it. And then she heard that song. And I think that song really made her want to work with me. So that's how that all started happening. And then I got a call that she wants me to fly to LA and work on her album and like asked me to block off, I believe it was 3 or 4 months of my time, which of course, like I dropped everything to make it happen. And I came to LA. I was kind of tasked to write music for her album, but she was obviously insanely busy and she wasn't actually able to show up for the first decent amount of that time. So yeah. I made 10 songs for her, of which I believe we ended up making 3 out of them and 7 that didn't work. But at some point I had created 10 songs and she wasn't ready yet. She was still busy. And I was now, I had canceled everything and I was sitting in that studio. So my mind went to like, well, I guess I might as well just make music for myself because I'm not sure there's any point in making more than 10 songs at this stage. So I just started making music for myself without a thought of an album, without anything. I just wanted to get creative. And it was such an amazing time of, I had an idea and that idea would take me 5 days to do. So I spent 5 days working on some random idea, not knowing if it would work out or not. This is a freedom that would be really hard for me to justify today because 5 days is a lot of time. My career is kind of like in full effect. So to take 5 days to just try something completely random and creative out and see if it works or not is something that's really hard for me to do today. But back in the day, it's like I didn't have a timeline. I was just waiting anyway. So I started making songs and I started working just kind of one at a time, of which most songs ended up being on Clarity. And I wanted to make a song with Porter Robinson, who's a friend of mine and one of my favorite producers. And we kind of came up together. So Porter flew in for 3 days. We ended up playing a tour together and we wanted to have a song together. So we started working on a song, started working on chords, started recording our voices, which are all the like the vocal chops that end up playing the melody inside Clarity is all mm-hmm. our voices. And we write the chords. And we kind of get through the first 30, 45 seconds of the song. There's no drop. There's no build. There was just kind of the verse. And then our 3 days are over. The song doesn't have vocals. The song really doesn't have a whole lot. I fly back to Germany. He flies back to North Carolina, where he lived at the time. I believe he still does. And at this stage, I'm kind of already well on the way with my album. And in my perspective, it's going to have to make sense in context of my album. In Porter's perspective, I think it was just a song that we kind of worked on to hopefully work with our tour. So I just kept working on it by myself because I wanted to get it to the finish line. And at some point I made the drop and I was curious, how would it feel if we had a vocal on this track, which we never even talked about a vocal for Clarity at this point. And I went through my a cappella folder, which was a cappellas had been sent, including this a cappella Clarity, which is something Matthew Coma wrote for a song called Lost at Sea on my album, which was a different chord progression. But if you put the two together, you can kind of see where his head was at when he was writing that top line. And when I heard his voice on Lost at Sea with the Clarity vocal, I think I replied something on the lines of, this vocal is way too strong for a song that is as passive as Lost at Sea is. Lost at Sea is a chill, driving song. The voice does not have to be as genius as I thought this vocal was. So I said, one day I will make a song with this voice for something else, which is something yeah. that happens frequently. I get a vocal that I really love. I feel like it doesn't fit. And one day I get back to that vocal. So it was sitting in my a cappella folder and I just kind of threw it in there just to see how a voice would sound. Pretty sure it was the first one I even tried. I pitched it up to the key of Clarity. And there was just this moment of like, there was just something really magical that happened. Clock ticks till it breaks your glass, and I'll drown in you again. 'Cause you are the piece of me I wish I didn't need. Chasing relentlessly, still fighting, I don't know why. If I've loved the chords of Clarity, I love the drop, but this together just really created something magical. And then I shared it with Porter, and Porter at the time, I think creatively was going a slightly different direction than I was and embracing pop just ever so slightly less. And he did not like the vocal, or he liked the vocal. He just didn't feel like it would fit what we were doing. And I was kind of scratching my head because A, I thought it was genius, and B, I was running out of time. I really yes. needed to get this onto my album. And it's, to me, this kind of made, this was the center point of my album. This really felt like it was tying it all together. So it got to the point where I had finished the whole song at this stage, and I kind of needed his approval because I really wanted this to be on my album. And we just got to the point where he said, just make it your song. We'll work on another song together. Like, it didn't fit what he wanted to do. And I was way too deep into what the song ended up being. So we, like, you know, in a friendly way, was like, just do you, make it what you want it to be. We'll work on another song. And that became Clarity.
You ended up with having artist Foxes, who's British singer Louisa Rose Allen, right? So she's the voice on Clarity, that great voice. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
My manager, Dave. So usually the way we work is I make a song, we get a vocal, we mock up a rough demo, and then we kind of write down a list of our main targets for who would sing the song. Because frequently the people who demo vocals on songs don't want to be on them. They just want to be the writer. They don't want to be the singer or artist. And in this case, the song didn't work for Matthew, who I really wanted to be on the song, because I had to pitch it up to get it to the key of Clarity, because initially it was written over another track of mine. And he was not in favor of that. And I couldn't reproduce the entire song, given the whole history of like all the melodies being our voices. And like, I can't go back and re-record everything from scratch.
Yeah, yeah.
So we started making a list of artists that we thought would fit. And Dave showed me Foxes, and I loved her voice. She was in England. I was in LA at the time. So we got on a FaceTime and kind of talked briefly through what we want to do. I don't even know if that was FaceTime or Skype back in the day, but you get the idea. We talked through it. She recorded in England. She sent the session over. And then, you know, I spent a couple days working with a vocal, recording some backings. You know, the rest was history. I had never met her in person. It was just, I heard her voice and I was like, this could be really good.
That's pretty incredible that you'd never met her in person. And and there's so much at stake when you have a song. You knew that it was a song that was so special. And so to have that kind of marriage of bringing in the voice, that's a huge decision to be able to do that.
It's a huge decision. And if she didn't nail it, the song probably wouldn't have been on the album. And we probably would not be having this conversation, because my time was set. Everything, the schedule was there. If this didn't make it, there's a high likelihood that the song would not have been part of the album. The album would have been called something else. Yeah. And I probably wouldn't have been, you know, where I am.
So do you have a standard process where you have a melody that comes to mind and you just start playing around?
So I don't have a standard way of doing things, but I have a few ways I usually end up making songs. My most preferred way is where I just improvise on a piano and usually just hit record, and I will just play there for an hour, and I'll come up with a chord progression that I really like. And then I go and use that chord progression in MIDI, and I start applying sounds to it. I start slowly building a structure, and I kind of try to leave enough space harmonically for a voice to sit over it. And then I will oftentimes want to collaborate with a singer and give them the song and see what they can come up with vocally. And then we kind of work back and forth to find something that everybody's happy with. Or I work with a writer that will write a demo that is loose enough for me to be able to bring this to a singer that I want to work with on the song and let them make it their own. I usually try to stay away from lyrics as much as I can, unless it really bothers me, because I want the singer to say the words that they mean. And if that means that they have to change, then I respect that, since they are the people actually singing it. So it's this juggle between, you know, doing what you want and letting your collaborator express themselves the way they want. Another way I sometimes work is if we sometimes get sent vocals that don't have songs. So it's just, imagine somebody writes on a piano, sings a vocal, doesn't make the song, and then they just sent me the vocal, and I love the vocal, and I will just build everything around it. So at that point, sometimes the structure is already there, predetermined by the vocal, and I just make the chords. Sometimes I don't even know what chords the initial vocal had ever intended. It's just, I hear a melody, and I write the chords, and then I produce the song around that. Those are kind of the two main ways I make songs. And on this new album, I think a lot of the songs were where I just wrote kind of chords that had a melody baked in. So the melody turned just like, I would just take the melody out of my piano or whatever synth was playing the melody, and that would become the vocal. So those are kind of the three main ways. If there is a clear melody that really sings itself through the harmonies, the chords, then I just try to stick with it. And then, you know, we kind of pivot a little bit in the chorus and try to make it not so repetitive. But I would say those are the three main ways I make music.
And how did the lyrics, how did that come to you and your other writers for Clarity? You know, the meaning of things like, You know, when you look at the lyrics and you, if our love is tragedy, why are you my remedy? And if our love's insanity, why are you my clarity? How did that happen?
So the lyrics are most of the time written by either the singer that ends up mm-hmm. singing it or the writer that wrote that melody. So okay. in this case, Matthew wrote the lyrics on top of Lost at Sea, which is another track that I wrote. And okay. the lyrics actually kept going. So there's more.
Okay, so that's what you were saying. So when you were talking about Lost at Sea, those lyrics, that was a little bit unclear to me. So those lyrics, clarity, so this is clarity that's brought to the question. So those yeah. lyrics from Lost at Sea were actually then swept over into this song.
Correct. Yeah, so those clarity was technically, if I had kept the vocal on the track that I wrote or the track that Matthew ended up writing the vocal to, then Lost at Sea would today be called Clarity. And okay. it would have actually, there were more vocals after the hook. There was like a post hook. Now the post hook no longer made sense in context of the today Clarity, right? So I will,
yeah.
the moment I brought in the vocal, I started slightly restructuring it because I needed it to make sense in context of the new song that I just made. So oftentimes, you know, in a case like this, the lyrics were written with a completely different intent. It's just that they became, like there became a new context for them, which is a completely new bed of music and a new structure. And this, the, and then of course, you know, I will adjust my instrumental to make the vocal fit. So if I had a hard hitting moment and the vocal is really soft, I'm going to adjust my song to make space for the vocal. So it's a constant push and pull between what I write as an instrumental and then the vocal I get back. And then you slowly find the middle ground for it.
Interesting.
Because I don't, I personally really don't like getting in a room with somebody and writing from scratch. I love to come prepared. I will make a bunch of chord progressions and then we see what do you vibe with? You like this chord progression? Let's work on that. And I obviously have already pre-written something. And then we might write a really good vocal, which makes me have to change the chords I made because the vocal is stronger than the chords and I want to
yep.
keep certain bits of it. And then I go back and change what I had previously written.
Fascinating. It's really interesting. And then let's go into a little bit of Out of Time, which is the new single and the new track and your new album that's going to be coming out at the end of August, at the very end mm-hmm. of August. So tell us a little bit about Out of Time. Your vocalist there is B. Miller and how that happened in that particular case.
So I started writing this song in 2015, which is
wow.
a long time ago. That's when I wrote it. It was labeled CC internally. Since because those were the, I just got my first house. It was on a street called Carmen Crest. And this was the very first song I wrote in my very first house. And is the first, it was just a piano demo back then. So the whole chord progression of it, the whole intro is basically what I wrote, but there was no vocal yet. And I felt like it was far too musical and theatrical for the music I had been making at the time, but I loved it. And in my mind, it was like one day, there will be an opportunity for this song to feel like it's in the right place. It's always stayed there in my career. I made a whole intro around that song, but it never actually resolved in it. I opened my shows with the song for years because it was this amazing emotion that made you want to like smile and cry at the same time, which is my sweet spot.
I love that.
Had a drop. Yeah, I really like when you don't know how to feel. About like whether you're supposed to feel this way or that way. I like giving the listener the final say over whether it's a happy or a sad song. I really, that's my favorite harmonic spectrum is when you can kind of feel both ways. So this song has been in my life for a long time. And then as I started working on Telos, my album, it just slowly became more and more theatrical. It became more and more cinematic. And this chord progression just made perfect sense. And to me was always kind of the center point of the album. Everything resolved around that DNA of complex chords that make you feel very emotional. So I started working on the song. I started producing a rough demo of it. And then there's been so many sessions that I had to do with the song to get the vocal where it is. I think the first one I wrote with Georgia Koo, who's incredible. And we kind of started writing a dark version of the song. I believe that was, I've worked on so many songs and did so many sessions this album that I might be mixing things up. But essentially, the long story short is that we made a song on my album, the second track on my album with B. Miller. That was the first song we worked on, and we've worked on it for quite a few days. And I realized how amazing she is. Like, genuinely, she brought a whole new life to my music. Out of Time was at this stage later on the album. And then I had this idea of bringing Out of Time into the first slot, creating an intro for it, and a transition into the second song, and a slight foreshadowing, so that B. Miller would essentially tell a longer story. Then we started working on that song with B, and I think just her energy of her voice is really what solved the puzzle for me, because now the drop had taken a completely different place for me. The instruments were the headliners in the drop, or the chorus, whatever you want to call it. But once I heard her voice on it, it completely changed. And I wanted my instruments just to be the background for her voice to shine, because to me, that was so much more emotional than what I had done previously. And we just piece by piece kind of worked through the whole song. And there's tempo changes, and there, you know, it goes from really soft and emotional to like really hard and heartwarming. And yeah, I mean, I feel to me, the whole song is just such a journey, and kind of, you know, brings those 9 years of the song being in my universe all like together.
That's very cool. Look, you know, it's going to be fun to watch you later on in the year when you're touring around, and just be part of the audience and inside and being part of it all, because it's one big party. Like, that's the thing. It's just such great energy that lifts everybody up. By the way, the new song is wonderful. It's just, it has,
so
it's great energy. And I was listening to it several times today.
Gosh.
That's why I'm so animated, I think.
I really but, appreciate that.
Walk on through a red parade and refuse to make amends. Finally hit my limit. Get me off this ride.
So you're always traveling. You're always doing collabs. What's it like?
Yeah. So I think the life of a DJ, as a DJ that is realizing that he's not getting any younger.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
It's resolving. Yeah, I mean, I will say that I was able to get away with drinking and partying and feeling perfectly fine the next day and having a 10-hour flight, no problem. And at some point, you realize that you can't really do that anymore without a 2-day-long hangover. So, you know, the life of a DJ is traveling a lot. And in my opinion, my job is to take care of my well-being as much as humanly possible, so that when I go on stage at 1:30 in the morning, I can give the crowd the 100% that I want them to get from me. And that's why I bring this up, because back in the day, I could party every night and I would be able to give 100%. And I realized at some point that when I noticed a lack of energy on my end because of my partying, that's when I started dialing it back. And I, you know, started drinking less to none. I started sleeping way more and putting way more emphasis on my rest and creating my schedules around getting enough sleep, getting a good travel pillow. All those things really matter.
Yes.
You know, it's not easy. The travel part is the hardest part. And when you're jet lagged, you don't have a choice to go on late. I will always go on time. And it just means a lot of preparation, thinking ahead, sleeping a lot, drinking tons of water, hydrating, working out, trying to stay fit, and then having fun on stage. Like I mentioned briefly, at some point I notice I'm not going to enjoy it anymore. And I think that's when I'm going to stop doing it, because I don't want to pretend. I want to love what I do. And I think people notice how much I love what I do when I'm on stage, and I want it to be that way for as long as I can.
Well, it looks like, so you were mentioning before your health regimen. So that's a really important part of your journey, like that, your health regimen. And it sounds like you've really evolved that over time to take better care of yourself.
Honestly, this was really important in the process of making my album. I had to create a space for me to be creative and lose my anxiety of having to climb this giant mountain of an album and doing the best I can. And for me, that was working out consistently. For a long time, did cardio every single day. I woke up and cold plunged, which woke me up. And then I lift weights 4 times a week. And I didn't drink any alcohol for probably about a year or so. Wow. I would sleep over 9 hours every single day. I would fall asleep within 5 minutes, the same time every night. I would wake up at the same time, and I would limit my studio hours as much as possible. I sometimes would go over it, but I tried to keep it to 6 hours a day, because to me, 6 hours a day is a time that is relatively easy to get through. When you're creative and in the zone, 6 hours go by, like, it feels like 90 minutes. And you can actually be excited to do that. You can actually wake up and think, I started this idea yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited to see where I can take it today. I used to be in the studio for 12 hours a day. And I have noticed when you feel burned out and you're just scared to walk into the studio because you're scared to have a day where you don't create something that you like. And I hated that feeling. So for me to finish this album on time, I needed to create a framework that could really allow me to be creative and not be scared to go in the studio. And that was actually limiting my time in the studio. And I felt like I got more done with 6 hours of work a day than I did with 10 hours of work a day, because I was excited and inspired. And all the workouts and health and sleep were all a crucial part of me being alert and there.
Wow, I need to adopt your health regimen, because I don't follow any of that and I need to. So
okay. Yes. I'll share it with you.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think you should share it. And then a couple things. I just thought it was pretty interesting. When you think about other things that you do, it sounds like acting is one of the things you're interested in, because I see that you made your acting debut in 2023's Disney Plus movie, Muppets Mayhem. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. I've done some minor work before, but I would say that was the first time I've experienced acting.
Yeah.
I think what made it easy for me was that I had to be myself, which is sort of acting, sort of not. And yeah, it was really fun. It was just a new experience, and I love experiencing new things in life. So yeah.
And one of the things,
and also the Muppets is incredible.
Yeah, of course. Like, that's a cool thing. The Muppets are awesome. Classic. So to be able to do that and for your first real acting, a narrative gig, that's very interesting. Now, you have a love for designing homes and watches. Those are two things that just describe that a little bit.
Yeah, I think over time, I really grew to love architecture, design. Yeah. And part of it is also the way it makes me feel. I see my life in sort of chapters. So my last chapter was in my last house, where I wanted everything to make me feel a certain way. And I created my album. And then I moved. The day I submitted the masters is the day I moved to my new place. So this is the start of a new chapter. And my goal here was the exact opposite. All of the art, which I'm a big fan of visual art, I'm changing all of my art to fit a certain criteria. Like, everything has to be matte. Everything has to be within the same four tones of anywhere between cream, a darker cream, a brown, and light greens. I want to be able to walk through the house and feel like you're in one continuous thought, sort of like my album approach, where I want everything to feel like, you know, you're telling the same story. And I think architecture and design is just part of, like, figuring out that giant puzzle of feeling like it's grand, but very homey, creative, but there's all these, like, angles to it that I've learned to not master, because I'm not great at it, but I'm a fan of a lot of amazing designers. And yeah, it's been really fun. It's been really fun learning a lot about design and angles and architecture just as a hobby. And watches is, I think, something it really was. I just want one watch. I saw John Mayer wear a watch on stage, and I wasn't into watches. I had an Apple Watch at the time. And when I saw that watch, I was like, I think I could do one watch. And then I had a photo shoot, and it was a dark watch. And the photographer said, it's a little too heavy for what we're trying to do. And I didn't have a lighter watch visually. It was a dark watch. So I was like, okay, maybe I need two watches, a dark and a light watch.
Yeah.
And then somebody's like, well, now we need you have a rose gold watch, but we have like a steel kind of look. So we kind of, okay, maybe I need three then. And once I got the third, it was all over. The door has opened, and I love the craft and the art of creating an art. I ended up doing a factory tour and learning about all the dials and the procedures of how to make it. So I think there's a little bit of a parallel I see within the world of watchmaking by hand, by people who devote their lives to be masters at something that is so delicate and pristine. And I just found a love for it. I can now want to collect a watch that I would never wear or rarely wear just because I love looking at it and appreciating the people that have spent months carving the smallest, beautiful, symmetrical details into the watch.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, that the artisan tree of it all, like, you know, being an artisan and the craft of it all. And as a DJ, even though you're using all these electronics, you're crafting yourself all these little pieces of it. And I have one other question beyond this, but I have to ask you just on that part of craftsmanship. And I know this is a much longer conversation, but how do you feel about generative AI?
It's a good question, and one that I'm not sure how good I am at answering, but I recently, and this is like a few days ago, came across this AI tool that is essentially the audio version of that Photoshop tool where you have an image and you can expand it. So you kind of feed the AI anything you want and it will continue it. And I, first of all, my mind was blown. I was equally excited and scared at the same time because it was so good. But then I just always try to think about it from a rational standpoint. Technology and development will never stop. My point is, like, can this be useful for me? And I actually got really excited because sometimes my bottleneck is my time. There's a lot of projects outside of my own album that I have been working on at the same time as my album. And sometimes it was really hard to juggle. I kind of need to record this vocal and I kind of need to progress this idea so that the other people can keep working on, because they're waiting for me. And I could imagine, for example, a case where I have a session with a singer. We come together and I told you I like to be prepared. Yeah. I can write a chord progression really quickly because that's something I can kind of do in real time. And then I could have this AI tool create like 10 variations. And then I can listen to those variations with the singer, and the singer might be like, "Ooh, this is really inspiring." We write to it. I have an amazing vocal. I go back and then I produce a song around it. That's a great way for me to use that tool. Or if I'm looking for a specific sound of wood hitting water, the 4 feet long log, I don't have to actually do it myself. I can tell AI to make me that sound and I will have it there. And that's, to me, such a dream. It will get me to work quicker and get to the goal. Am I scared of it? I mean, it's, I'm not thinking about it too much. I think eventually it will probably get really scary. It's already scary good, but I'm still in the perspective of I'm excited that AI can give me tools to do what I do better and more creative.
Yeah. And then finally, I have to ask you, as a DJ producer who works with all these great artists, and you listen to so much music, I'm sure, all the time, what's on your playlist right now?
Good question. Okay, I'm just going to look at my phone. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm just going to give you the real answer.
No, I love it.
I have been really loving Willow. This is something I discovered recently. I think her new album is incredible. The other things on my playlist are Relaxing Massage.
Ah, okay.
There's that.
There's the health.
Fair enough. Maybe that's the real reason. There's a band called The Olam that I have been completely obsessed with.
What is it called?
The Olam, with three L's, O-L-L-L-A-M. They are an Irish whistle/pipe band. That are absolutely phenomenal, very unknown, and not for a good reason, because they're absolutely incredible. So I've been listening to a lot of that. A lot of the music that I listen to when I listen to music is a lot of old stuff. Like, when I say old, I mean like stuff I grew up with, whether that's King Crimson or Genesis or Silverchair, which is a band that's arguably the most inspiring to my entire life. It's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff. Otherwise, Lizzie McAlpine was an artist that I've been listening to a lot recently. And beyond that, I don't listen to a lot of music. I know this sounds bad, but when I create music all day, I kind of feel like I need silence afterwards.
You know, it's interesting because I hear that a lot from artists when I'm speaking with them. It's the same thing. It is counterintuitive, I think, to a lot of us. But the way you explained it, it makes sense. You need some, you know, you want some rest a little bit.
I would much rather listen to podcasts, genuinely. Like, whenever I drive my car, I used to listen to the radio a lot. And these days, it's like my time to educate myself and learn something new. And I love learning. It's probably my biggest hobby, is just to learn about things that I don't even care about. Like, I get obsessed with details. So I watch videos about TVs all the time just so I know what's inside of them and the chips and the technology. I don't even need a TV. It's more so like I just like knowing about things. And I'm sort of a nerd in that regard, that I just like knowing things about tech and health most of the time. So when I drive somewhere, I have a longer period of time, I will almost always prefer to listen to a podcast over listening to music. But then occasionally, you know, when, and I don't really party that much, so I don't really know when, if I have a pool day and I'm outside in the pool, that's the perfect time to, and what I will oftentimes do is genuinely just play one music, one song, the mood, the direction, and then Spotify will take it from there. And I learn about new music because it just shows, like, it plays amazing stuff that I never known, and then I kind of heard it, and then I listen to the artist after the fact.
That was Anton Zaslavsky, a.k.a. Zed, telling the story behind his classic dance anthem, Clarity. I'm your host, Peter Chadi of Deep Cuts Media. Thanks for listening to the story behind the song, and stay tuned each Monday for another episode of new interviews mixed with classic interviews of icons like Debbie Harry of Blondie, Sheila E., Rick Astley, and Boy George. Reach out to me at peter@deepcutsmedia.com if you want to add your own icons to the list. And make sure to like, subscribe to, and share each episode in the show itself. And check out our Story Behind the Song merch on the Consequence website. If you like the artwork for my podcast, you'll love the poster. I have one hanging right here in my studio. Until next week, you can revisit all of the great nearly 50 interviews from seasons 1 and 2. The artists are legendary, and their stories are classic and timeless. And as always, thanks for listening to the Story Behind the Song.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.